Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I am pleased to bring to you the sixth Aliyah of Parshat Shmini in the book of Vayikra. This Aliyah primarily contains the instructions regarding to the laws that we now know as kashrut, kosher food and unkosher food, although that word, or I should say kosher animals and unkosher animals, but that word which means prepared, liot mukhshar, means to be good to go, to be ready, is really kind of a misnomer, which, if we use it, eclipses a little bit of what's going on here. In the Bible, in Torah, animals are not called kosher or non-kosher. They are called tahor or tameh, ritually pure or ritually impure, at least as far as the mammals are concerned. Other animals are called shkatzim, or abominations, which is even further off the charts. And the reason why mammals are called tahor and tameh is because really all of this is connected to the status of the Kohen and the rest of the nation and the purity status that they needed to keep themselves in order to perform sacrificial services, to eat from the holy items, the Trumot and the Kodesh Kodeshim. I don't mean to say that it's not about kashrut, it's not about what we put into our bodies, but it is, but it's more than just about what we need to eat. There's even about the fact that we can't touch them, because by touching them under certain circumstances that we'll see, our bodies are transformed to a state of tumah, of ritual purity as well, which interferes with our ability to do service for a Kohen or otherwise take part in the produce of the Mishkan, of the Holy Tent or of the Temple. Remember that, in the 40 years in the desert, the only mammals that people ate were ones that were sacrificed in the Mishkan. You couldn't just shech the cow and eat a cow. Only if you brought a korban could you then, a shlamim, or take part in the meat of that animal, which means the idea of what you put on in your body and what gets offered on the altar is, at least for those 40 years, to a large degree linked, and linked afterwards as well to some degree. Now, all of this material is well known, what is kosher and non-kosher, so to speak, and some of it, specifically which kind of animals, the identifications, is a little bit up in the air. In fact, there's a midrash saying that when Moshe was going through the list of impure birds, tamei birds, he had to hold up each one of them at a time so that the Israelis would know what he was referring to. So, of course, this puts us in a difficult position. So, in general, I'll try to identify the animals as best as I can based on the works of Yehuda Flix, who is a zoologist in Israel. But otherwise, you have to keep in mind that things are you know, not going to be completely clarified. The Aliyah breaks up into the different types of animals, mammals, birds, fish, and invertebrates, shratzim, the creepy, crawly, teeming things. And each one is treated separately. At the end, it will deal with the issue of it will start the broader issue of how inanimate objects can become ritually impure as well. That's very important. I'll get to that in a second. Dabru al bnei Yisrael lemor zot achaya asher tochlu mikol habehima asher la'aretz kol mafreset parsa v'shosat shesa pirasot ma'alat gera babehima uta tochelu. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron to say to them, meaning them being Aaron's children, as we will see. This is, of course, setting up an educational and instructional system where Moshe gets the law, tells it to Aaron as the high priest. They give it over to their children then instruct the Israelites in whatever has to do with daily service, a kind of a dissemination process. Anyway, continuing with the verse, speak with the Israelis, so it's clear that it's the children of Aaron who were the go-betweens. Speak with the Israelis, saying, this is the type of living creature that you may eat from every animal, really a mammal that is on this earth, these are the signatures of the types of animals, of mammals that you may eat. Any animal that has hooves that are completely cloven, meaning from end to end, as if two semicircles essentially, not connected. Those that bring up their cud, that is those who also bring up their cud, those you may eat. The fancy term for chewing cud, and I'll use it here, is rumination. I read that on Wikipedia, which has some really nice illustrations and explanations of how the whole digestive regurgitation of the cud takes place, so it's worth a look. Anyway, next the Torah makes clear that animals that have only one of these attributes, may not be eaten. Ach et ze lo tochlu mima'alei ha-gera u-mima-frisei ha-parsa et ha-gamal kima'alei gera hu u-farsa einenu mafris tamehu lachem ve'et ha-shafan kima'alei gera hu u-farsa lo yafris tamehu lachem ve'et ha-arneved kima'alad gera hi u-farsa lo hifrisa tamei'ahi lachem ve'et ha-chazir kima'afris parsa hu v'shosa ha-shesa parsa V'hu gera lo yigar, tamei hu lachem. Mibsaram lo tochelu min ablatam alo tigao, tmeim heim lachem. So now let's move on in our chapter 11. But these you shall not eat from, those that ruminate and have true hooves. The camel, since it ruminates but does not have hooves, it is impure to you, or impure for you, which means you cannot eat it. So too the shafan, which is thought to be a hyrax, a rodent-like creature, since it chews its cud, but it does not have hooves, it is impure to you. So too the arnevet, since it ruminates, but does not have hooves, it is impure to you. In modern Hebrew, arnevet is a rabbit or a hare, but that seems not to be the animal here, since neither rabbits nor hare chew their cuds. If you ever see one chewing their cud, it's, I don't know what it's doing, but it's not chewing its cud. The next animal, however, is quite clear what it is. It's a pig, the chazir, or the boar, or other, you know, pig-related specimens. Because while it has hooves, and in fact completely cloven hooves, which means end-to-end, it does not ruminate, which means it doesn't chew its cud, it is impure for you. Don't eat their meat, and don't touch their carcasses. They are impure to you. Now, while the plain sense is that touching them is as prohibited as eating them, oral law teaches us differently, that one who touches them, that is, I mean, you're not supposed to touch them. If you do touch them, that you become impure, which is not a general problem, but it is a problem if you're a Kohen who's working in the temple, or if you're an Israelite who is in the process of dealing with the sacrificial material, of eating the sacrifices, depending on the type of food that you are eating. And as I said, a lot of this parsha is, not that it's not about just kashrus in the sense that we know, but also the question of how a person remains in a state of purity, especially when one is involved in temple service. It's interesting that when it came to animals that have hooves but don't ruminate, that is, the pig was one sample, and all we needed was one sample. But the other way around, where we had the chewing of the cud but not the split hooves, so the Torah gave three types of animals, the camel, the hyrax, and whatever the arnevet is. So my guess is that because they have different foot appearances, and in fact a camel has sort of a semi-split, if I'm not mistaken, so therefore perhaps Moshe sort of went through the various types of foots to show, you know, a cloven hoof is a cloven hoof, and not this type, and not that type, and not a third type. Anyway, now we move on. The Torah moves on to water-based creatures. Et ze tochlu mikol asher b'mayim, kol asher lo sinapir v'kaskeset b'mayim b'yamim uv'anachalim otam tochelu v'chol asher ein lo sinapir v'kaskeset b'mayim uv'anachalim mikol sheretz ha'mayim mikol nefesh ha'chaya asher b'mayim sheketzeim lachem v'sheketz yihiyu lachem mibsaram lo tochelu v'et nivlatam tishaketu. Kol asher ein lo snapir because keset b'mayim sheketz hu lachem. This you can eat from all that is in the water, anything that has fins and scales, whether it is in the water of the seas or the rivers, which I think means fresh water and salt water. Fins, according to the Talmud, means the body parts used by the fish to swim, which would include the dorsal fin, the tail fin, and the various other fins on a fish. But any who do not have fins and scales in the oceans and rivers, that is among salt water and freshwater creatures, among all the teeming things, which includes all those invertebrates, would be lobsters, octopi, squids, snails, you know, the usual gang of characters. From all breathing creatures in the water, they are an abomination for you. And an abomination they will continue to be for you, they will be for you. Do not eat from their flesh, you will treat their carcasses as an abomination. Now, there's a lot of doubling going on here. There's a lot of repeated instruction, and in the simple sense it could be just to put emphasis on things, especially because, as everybody knows today, sea creatures are very popular eating, scangili and calamari, and perhaps because they were so popular, therefore an extra emphasis was necessary. Our oral law, Torah Sheval Peh, draws many kinds of aspects of kashrut laws from these irregular or repeated wordings, but that's outside the scope of this project, which is Echad Mikra Shtayim Targum, really to stay close to the text itself. So, that being said, returning again to the text, any water-based creature that has either no fins or no scales is an abomination to you. And as I said, a lot of oral law here, and here the oral law says this third repetition is to exclude kosher, what happens with fish that have kosher signs and then lose them when they're out of the water, or that start without kosher signs but then grow into kosher signs. But again, that's oral law. In those cases, the animal would be kosher, but the simple sense of the text is, I would say, repetition for emphasis. And now on to avians, birds. For birds, no signs are given as they were with fish and with animals. Rather, specific birds are prohibited, meaning everything else that's not on the don't eat list or don't fly list, so to speak, is okay. Since the exact identification of these birds are lost over time, the rabbis defined attributes that were equivalent to the general intent of what God wanted, and it would indicate whether a bird was fit to eat or not. So they focused on the shape of the talons and the beak and the digestive structure. The general rule that seems to be that if it's a predator bird, it's out. But if it's a nice herbivore bird eating berries or whatnot, so then it's okay. I guess worms are okay too. The bottom line is what we believe is that if you had a tradition that this was a bird that you could eat, your father ate it, your father's father ate it, then that was a kosher bird. And if there was no tradition that that bird was eaten, no matter whether it looked like a kosher bird or not, you simply couldn't eat it, which caused a great controversy when we got to the New World, to the east, to the west, to the Americas, and they found new birds like turkey. So there was some dispute about whether turkey should be kosher, but fortunately for turkey lovers and Thanksgiving Day aficionados, calmer heads prevailed. Vet ele tishaktsum min haof lo ye'achlu sheketzeim et ha'nesher v'et ha'peres v'et ha'uznia v'et ha'da'a v'et ha'ya l'mina v'kol orev l'mino v'et ha'yana v'et ha'tachmas v'et ve'et ha'shachav v'et ha'neitz l'mineyu v'et ha'kos v'et ha'shalach v'et ha'yanshur v'et ha'tinshemet v'et ha'ka'at v'et ha'racha v'et ha'chasida ha'anafa l'mina v'et ha'duchifat v'et ha'atalef. There's some confusion of the word da'a and ayah, because there's, when this instructions show up again, it comes out as there's a bird called the da'ya, which is neither of these. There seems to be a connection between the two. But I'll leave that alone for right now and just stick to, translations, although again, the identifications are educated guesses at best. And these are the birds you shall treat as an abomination. That is, it's beyond just tahor and tameh. They are simply abomination. The griffin vulture, I know everybody thinks the nesher is an eagle, but it appears that a nesher actually is a griffin vulture, the bearded vulture, the black vulture, the kite, and all kinds of falcons, all kinds of ravens, and the ostrich, and maybe an eagle or another type of falcon, a gull, all types of hawks, and a night owl, and a fish owl, and a long-eared owl, and a screech owl, and a tawny owl, and the Egyptian vulture, and a stork, and all kinds of heron, and the hoopoe, and the bat. Of course, a bat's not a bird at all, but a mammal, but since it flies, God categorized it here with all the other flying creatures. Again, all these identifications are best guesses, based on the works of Yehuda Flix, who's a well-known Israeli naturalist and knows Tanakh as well, and he wrote a really cool book on the flora and fauna of Israel and in the Bible. The general sense, as I said, is that if it's a bird of prey, it's out. And the truth is, that's sort of like that with mammals. It's the herbivores we eat, not the omnivores or the carnivores. But all this is a chok. We can take a few guesses on why God chose certain animals to be tahor or good for a human to be being to eat, and some that were out of grounds. But it essentially, conjectures need to be left as conjectures, especially in the world of chok, where we don't know exactly the reasons why God did what he did. I could say, by the way, a word about a chicken. I was once, when I lived in Israel, I spent a lot of time with friends in a nice yeshiva called Shavei Shomron, and they had a pet chicken. Don't ask me why, but they had a pet chicken. And they served the chicken, cooked chicken, and the chicken ate the chicken. So besides being a little bit gross, to be perfectly honest, that doesn't mean that, of course, a chicken is a carnivore. It's just a chicken is so stupid it'll be willing to eat anything that's put in front of it. But the fact that I once saw a chicken eat a chicken does not break that hypothesis that God permitted all non-carnivorous birds. And now we move on to swarming things, which I guess best probably pretty much we could translate as insects. Kol sheretz ha'of, or a specific type of insects, as we'll see. Kol sheretz ha'of ha'olech al arba sheketz hulachem, achet zeh tochlu mikol sheretz ha'of ha'olech al arba asher lo kira'ayim, mima'al l'raglav l'nater b'hem al ha'aretz, et eile mehem tochelu et arbe l'mino v'et ha'sal'am l'minehu, v'et ha'chargol l'minehu v'et ha'chagav l'minehu. V'chol sheretz ha'of asher lo arba raglayim sheketzu lachem. Any flying invertebrate or a winged insect which walks on all fours is an abomination for you, except... And by the way, I think all fours would include all sixes and all eights as well, but here we're focusing, the Torah wants to focus on the four-legged creatures because some of those will be kosher as opposed, or good eaten as opposed to other insects which are completely off limits. From all the flying bugs that have above their feet a jointed leg, that they use to leap upon the earth, of these kinds specifically you may eat, all kinds of locusts, which is how I'm translating arbe, all kinds of long-headed grasshoppers, which I'm translating for salam, the chargal or katydids, or I think they're also known as crickets, and the chagav going with standard grasshoppers. But all flying insects, literally swarming things that have wings, they that have four legs, meaning not the types mentioned above, that is, the ones that are hoppy, H-O-P-P-Y, so those are okay, but the ones that are not mentioned above, they are an abomination for you. We now, move on to kind of a new set of laws. Now that we've sort of covered all the animals, we're moving on to a new set of laws, which is things that cause other things to become ritually impure upon contact. And first we start off with the various type of animals and living creatures that cause other things to become ritually impure upon contact. So it's not so much about eating, but about contact at this point. Ule'ele tita'amu kol hanogem nivlatam yitmad arev. And through these, meaning these things to be listed soon, through these things you become ritually impure, touching their carcass. Obviously it's only if they're dead, will make one impure, a person impure until the evening. And anyone who carries their carcasses must wash their clothes, that is in addition to that, and remain impure until the evening. And now for the creatures that cause this effect. L'chol ha-behemash here, asher hi mafresa parsav shosad, eina v'shasa eina shosad, v'geira einena ma'ale, tmeim hum lachem kol nogei behem yitma. V'chol lecha al-kapav, v'chol l'chaya, ho-lechet al-arba, tmeim heim lachem kol nogei behem yitma. Any animal that has hooves but is not split all the way through or doesn't ruminate, it doesn't chew its cud, it is impure to you, and anyone who touches it, meaning of course the corpse of it, becomes ritually impure. The Eben Ezra actually makes fun of a Karaite who assumed that even petting a live animal of this type would make one unclean, but that is rejected. And any that walks on its paws, meaning like lions, tigers, and bears, not to mention dogs, of course, and cats, are impure, and anyone who touches their carcasses becomes impure until the evening, and those who carry their carcasses must wash their clothes. They are impure until evening, since these are all impure to you. And now on to eight types of I don't know how to describe it, rat-like creatures or creepy crawlies, really, that make one impure if a person comes into contact with their carcasses. Vizela lachem hatamei basheretz. Sheretz, hasheretz al aretz. Sheretz means to team. All the things that, I don't know how to describe it. If you've ever seen rats in a gigantic horde all climbing over each other and scrambling and reproducing at a mass rate, so then you get an idea of what it means by sheretz. Hacholed v'achbar v'atzav l'mineu v'anaka v'akoach v'halita'a v'achomet v'antinshamet eila hatmeim lachem b'chol asharetz kol anogia behem b'motam yitma ad ha'arev. And the following are impurity among the teeming things that teem on the earth, the rat, or perhaps cholet is a mole. But again, all these, as I said, all these animal ideas are tentative. And the mouse, that seems to be the achbar, and all kinds of spiny-tailed lizards. Today, the word sav means a turtle, but that's not the intent here. It's like the Arab word dab, which is like tsav here, which means a spiny-tailed lizard or that kind of creature, and the gecko and the desert monitor and the lizard and the skinkus, S-C-I-N-C-U-S, and the chameleon. These are the things that are impure to you among the swarming things. Anyone who touches them when they are dead will be ritually impure until the evening. Now, we get to the final pasuk in the sixth aliyah, and the issue really is, with all of these impure things, what happens if they touch other objects, whether it's inanimate objects, and what is the transference of impurity from state to state, what we call Rishon Letuma and Avatuma and Sheni Letuma. For some reason, this verse here is at the end of Aliyah 6. It seems to me that it would fit better in Aliyah 7, but we'll start here and we'll continue on tomorrow. V'chol asher yipol alav mehem bimotam yitmam yikol kli eitz o beged o or o sak o kol kli asher yeyasem lacha bahem b'mayim yuvav tamei an ha'arev v'tayar. And anything, what we see here, it means an inanimate utensil, any kli that falls upon these, meaning the lizards and the tamei animals and the dead, all in a dead state, the dead dog, the dead cat, anything that falls onto any utensils made from wood or clothing or leather or a sack, any utensils that can be used for work, which means they have to be ready to use, not still in process, they should be brought into water. That is, they become tamei, and they should be brought into water, which is, of course, what we call dipping into a mikvah, although it will remain impure and therefore not to be used for kodesh things such as holding truma until the evening. And tomorrow we will continue in this vein of different type of vessels and different type of things that may or may not or might not become ritually impure based on contact with other impure things, and if they do become impure, exactly how they are returned to a pure state.